You know the great thing about swords?
Not off the top of my head, no.
Equal opportunity for usage, whether you are the one who are wielding it or getting stabbed by it, and it's very inclusive for dating.
What?
Hey, you beautiful people, and welcome to E-Day Fix, a podcast about a couple hyperfixating on obscure pop culture. I'm Paul Unger, and I've had 8 cups of coffee today, and ADHD said no.
I'm Jess Unger, and it literally does not matter how much sleep I have had. I am so tired all the time. Sleep deficits are no joke, folks. Okay. I can feel my teeth in my mouth.
That's the worst kind of tired.
Like, why are they so big? Why do they take up so much room? Ugh.
Now.
What are we talking about today, Paul?
Now, on today's episode, we are going to be talking about something that's very inclusive to the Alphabet Mafia. And while we are recording during Pride Month, this will not come out during Pride Month. But here on E-Day Fix, we are here for the queer all the time. And much like Ebenezer Scrooge in the finale of A Christmas Carol, it's something that you should carry in your heart all year round.
Oh, goodness. Okay. True. I don't know about that particular statement. I mean, I get it.
Oh, yeah. It's the sentiment. I don't think that Ebenezer Scrooge would have been terribly down with Pride Month. It was a different time, but also it took him really a long time to come around to workers' rights. I feel like queer culture would put him in the grave.
Okay. So how about we switch it up a bit and say, make it like it's the moral of My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic. You carry that in your heart with you all year round.
We can see about that.
Okay, we'll workshop it.
But today's episode, we are going to be talking about a dating game, but also a dungeon crawler, and a game that we are very happy to kickstart on Kickstarter a very long time ago and then kind of forgot about. We're talking about Kit Fox's Games Boyfriend Dungeon.
Yay! It was actually super cool to see us in not necessarily game credits, but...
Yeah, the backer credits.
Our names in the backer credits. That was really cool.
I forgot that we had backed this game because I've backed so many things on Kickstarter over the years that I kind of get that blind spot to seeing those email notifications of, oh, you have an update from Kickstarter. And usually I don't check it. I kind of binge through updates once I go and back another project. I'm like, oh, there's the little bell with 99 plus notifications for stuff. That's how I live my life.
Yeah, that's par for the course.
Yeah. But this game has you as a character who is all-inclusive. You can choose your pronouns at the beginning of the game and basically design your character however you see fit.
It's a little chibi guy, though. Like, yeah. It's not like a super huge slider. It's like you're a little chibi guy. You choose what you wear and what your hairstyle is and what color it is.
Your standard dating game affair. Where you can do like your little customization.
Yeah.
But you are a character going to Verona Beach for a summer, basically to get out into the world because you've never gone on a date beforehand. And your cousin Jesse, who is going to help you kind of get out of your shell. And you happen to meet people who transform into weapons, which is just a thing in this world. And we are down for it.
Absolutely. The other thing I really liked about this is there's a text system where that's how you communicate between all the characters in the game. And it'll ask you ahead of time, there are going to be texts that are going to come in from a character named Mom. Is that okay with you? So it asks a lot of consent, which I really, really loved. And also, if you do pick yes and you're good with that, Mom is so sweet.
She is.
She's so nice.
Just super supportive. Be the video game mom that you want to see in the world.
Exactly.
That being said, the game itself actually is interesting in the fact that it gives you sort of your warnings upfront about what types of things you'll come into that you'll come to face during the game.
Mm-hmm.
It all the characters are super supportive except
one
who is the antagonist, who ends up being your first date that your cousin sets you up on and the ongoing foil for the rest of the game.
Yep.
And his name is Eric.
And he is...
a blacksmith in town, because apparently, again, this is a culture of weaponry and people who are weapons as well.
Yeah. But he is what you would characterize nowadays as a quote-unquote nice guy.
Yes. He, because Jess and I were playing this, and when he first came on the screen, we're like, oh, we can get behind this.
This guy's super great.
Yeah, we're down with this. And then it's just little by little, those little things that you pick up on. And here's something. I've been out of the dating game for over a decade at this point.
Yes.
And
I should hope so.
Yeah. I didn't really need to deal with a lot of... I never did online dating whatsoever. So I got to bypass all that. I know you weren't so lucky, but I got to miss that entire wave of online dating. And I just found you. And that was awesome. And like, I hear these stories on Tinder and all that of just, you know, horrible conversations to go on. And really, I couldn't empathize with it because I'm just like, this is just awful. Why would you subject yourself to this? And getting just a small taste of that in this game.
It's yucky.
It is. It gave me such anxiety.
Yeah.
That I never had to deal with beforehand. I do not want to deal with that ever. But I know with some characters, that's what they were trying to go for. And in my experience, like just from how it made me feel, because Eric ends up being very overbearing to
yep.
you.
Yep.
It came across very well. Good job, guys.
Yeah, they faced a lot of backlash for Eric's character for making him that way. But it, while it was yucky feeling and really uncomfortable, I think for the nature of the game, it was not necessary, but it was an okay touch because it gives you a wide range of characters and people that you would encounter when dating, and it actually helps you identify the oh heck no red flags.
Yes.
That you would run into.
Now, one of the things that your cousin tries to set you up with after these first date goes awry is sending you to a new gym because you're in Verona Beach. It's a very sort of like California-esque place.
Mm-hmm.
He sends you to a gym called The Dunge, which is short for dungeon. It's a new type of place where you go and basically fight monsters based out of your fears, which seems like it'd be a much more heavier subject. But you go in with someone who transforms into a weapon and fight your way through and kind of earn some cash.
And face your fears.
Yeah. And get a good workout during it.
Yeah.
And this is where you meet your first weapon.
Person.
Person. What are we going to call them?
I don't know.
Because they just... Anyways.
We can just call them weapons.
Yeah. So while you're going through the dungeon, you end up first meeting Isaac, who is an instructor there, also a fencing instructor, who mm-hmm. is a not quite venture capitalist, but he is also a lawyer and funder of different... he's funding an app, like a dating app for weapons and other people to meet up.
Oh, he's an investor.
Super good guy. He ended up being one of the people that won us over in the get, like right from the get-go.
Yep.
And... he's being super supportive. He kind of guiding you through your first time going through there. But as you start digging into the dungeon, you find damaged weapons.
Mm-hmm.
Weapons that have no idea how they ended up in the dungeon and kind of being chipped and worn apart.
Mm-hmm.
And as you're going through, you're finding new weapons, new people. And these end up being sort of the dating pool that you have. And there's a whole slew of characters. Like the first one that you meet is after Isaac. Is Sunder, who is a nightclub owner and also kind of skeeved us out a little bit.
Yeah, he was like your playboy type.
We did not progress his story as much because he just rubbed us the wrong way.
Yes.
We have the painter, Valeria, who is a dagger.
Mm-hmm.
And she ended up being the one who won us over the game in the game. But we will get to that because there's a reason why we went with her and made it really difficult to double back. you meet a local university student, Sawyer, who turns into a glaive, and they are just adorable as heck. just so sweet and so bad at life.
Okay.
You meet the K-pop boy band star, Seven.
Seven.
Who turns into a laser sword, which...
Sweet.
You can't really beat that. It was a fun one. With you meet Pocket, who is turns into bladed brass knuckles, and they are a cat. They are just a cat.
Named Pocket.
And I love them, and their story was fantastic. And then the one who we did not meet until very late in the game.
Unfortunately.
And I regret it so much.
Yep.
Is Rowan, who turns into a scythe. And their crow, Crowley, who...
Their crow is albino, and he always says pretty human.
They are just a fantastic pair, and unfortunately, with the way that I had played the game...
We didn't get to Rowan until...
I got to a point where I was just kind of going through the dungeons and wasn't necessarily doing some of the other story quests.
Yeah.
And then I progressed the relationships of Valeria and Isaac a little too far, and then I felt yucky... double timing on them after talking about commitment. It made it difficult because I didn't want to be a giant hoe bag.
It's a quality you look for in a partner, really.
It is. Hey, it's something I try and do in my life.
It shows.
Yeah.
It's very evident. Yeah. And I appreciate it. Thank you.
So the cast that they give you to actually date and explore relationships with are just... Okay, aside from Sunder, I'm sure that the trope of this skeezy guy, as you build this relationship, builds towards, you know, a much more meaningful relationship, but we didn't go down that path.
Mm-hmm.
And I think by the end of the game, we're just like, oh, we would just be, all that was left to like max the relationship out was on Sunder. And we were at the end of the game.
Yeah. And we pretty much predicted what was going to happen anyway, which kind of took a little bit of the fun out of it. So,
but... with all these other relationships, it's about sort of building up a level of intimacy where you actually get to see that vulnerability and people working through those insecurities that they have.
Mm-hmm.
So without getting into too much spoilers, it gets into just trying to, you know, people who might be dealing with an overbearing figure in their life that's been guiding them, or someone else who's trying to set up boundaries with someone from a previous life. People who are dealing with grief. There's a lot of interesting stories there. And for the size of the game, because the game itself, like, I think I played it over two or three, like, couple hour sessions.
Something like that. It didn't take you very long.
No. It ended up being a really nice experience where just the writing, the voice acting in the game when it is there.
Is very good.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It just also like very meaningful. It was nice. And being able to kind of tailor your character around to how you wanted them to be.
Mm-hmm.
It was like you can.
There's like, conversation options. Yeah.
Yeah. And when you set up your character, you can choose, you know, gender pronouns. You can dress mm-hmm. them up however you want. I went from wearing a business suit to wearing a fancy summer dress to just mess around with outfits. Just, it was nice.
Yeah.
Mess around.
Yeah.
Do whatever you want. And I found myself, like, I know there's new DLC that's coming out at the end of the, I think there's two new characters or three new characters being added at the end of the summer.
Oh, okay.
But this had just come out on Game Pass. Plus, we have the, I think we have it on the Steam key, which we got for backing the game. But it's just one that I kept on forgetting to go back to, but Kit Fox Games has come out with some amazing stuff from Moon Hunters to their redoing Dwarf Fortress with a visual style, which like an actual visual interface. It's a game that was done almost entirely in ASCII and Word.
Oh, wow.
And it's one of those.
Is it text-based?
No, it's like, sorry. It's a strategy style game, but where there are so many variables at play where just anything could happen. It's basically like playing D&D on a civilization scale where the DM is always going to say yes to, can you do that? But this game has been around for so long and it's just so obtuse that I've never been able to get into it. But I'm looking forward to it having the visual interface so I can maybe grasp it a little bit better.
Okay.
It's just too much noise for my
Already noisy
yes.
brain?
Yes. Yeah. And the people who work at the studio, I've only ever met a few of them, but they are some really fun people. And the person who was doing the first part of the marketing campaign, Victoria, did a phenomenal job with the start of it. I think she was one of the first developers I saw on TikTok at the time.
Okay.
And she was killing it.
Ooh.
And she then went on to do marketing for Among Us as it started to like really peak up in their campaign there. So I hope that hope they're doing really well with that. But this game still has a really good strong, like still seeing them kick around on TikTok, still getting the updates about the new DLC characters.
I need to go follow them.
Yeah.
Special shout out in this because as someone who grew up with Sailor Moon, I really appreciated the transformation sequences in this.
They are very well animated, and they happen for all the characters at least once, and each one of them has a flourish that's specific to that character.
Yeah, and it's not super polished animation. It looks a little bit rough, but that's part of the charm. Like, I don't know. I love them all so much. It was so neat to see them transform and what their weapon looked like. And relating it back to what their human form looked like. It's so neat. It's it's really visually appealing. It's very nice. It's very nice on your brain, except for when you're actually doing the dating part. Then it's anxiety inducing. But other than that, it's very good.
Another thing that I thoroughly enjoyed about this game was the music. There's some really good music tracks that are just really enjoyable. And I pulled up the soundtrack just recently because we were backers, so I realized I can go through the email and find where we received a copy of it because I'm like, oh, I'm going to go buy that on Bandcamp. Wait a moment. Stop for a second.
We already own
this, and this is why you have a spreadsheet of stuff you own, Paul. So I went there, and it's not like I would have remembered my Bandcamp login again. That's its own problem. I need, like, a password manager for my password manager if it's not saved. The anytime I need to change my computer up, it sets me back about like 2 months.
Wow.
Yep. But this is how I live my life. But back to the relationships there. I found it really interesting that all of them could either be taken in a romantic or a platonic direction.
Yeah. And you can still max them out either way.
There are some that are exclusively platonic. Like you can't romance the cat. You can't romance the cat for very obvious reasons, but you can develop a very nice and healthy relationship with the cat. And that is what matters.
Exactly.
I am looking forward to this game actually getting its DLC because there's new scenarios that are coming out. There's a formal setting, which I don't know the details of it, but seeing the characters in all their variations of outfits just... Oh. Makes me very happy.
Oh, wow. Yep, that.
And there's something there for everybody.
Yeah.
Which.
Literally, pretty much.
Makes me very happy.
Yep, same here.
And games like this make me want to try more of the visual novels. Like, I think we talked about this with Paradise Killer.
Yeah.
Where it was a visual novel, but it was an investigation. And in this one, it's a visual novel, but it's with a dungeon crawler, and I'm still looking for something to scratch the rogue-like itch from Hades.
Oh, okay.
And this is getting a little bit of that.
Okay.
And I'm starting to like visual novels a little bit more because I know I'm trying... Oh, what was the one, the Japanese visual novel that made me... just acutely aware that someone had discovered digital numbers and made it my problem. It was like the escape room style one, and it's going to bug me that I can't remember it.
Not the Akira?
No, I'm going to have to look it up later. But that one I was also really enjoying until I dropped and forgot about it, and now I'll have to go and find it. Anyways, point is, I'm finding that I can't go for a strictly dating style game. I think that might just be too boring unless it has some sort of weirdness or different spin on it, or a dating game with another game attached to it. I think that might also be it.
Okay. Because, like, I'm so ashamed to admit this. I love dating sims. I love them so much. That's why I also was super excited about Dream Daddy. That was so fun.
Dream Daddy was good. I really enjoyed Dream Daddy. And that was its own thing where I think we burned through that after watching someone else do a playthrough of that game. So it was like a lot of Dream Daddy all at once. Not that I minded. That was a fun, fun game. I guess my thing is like, it really gets difficult to progress. Like you kind of lock into a certain point.
Yeah.
And with this one, at least let you, if you wanted to just
romance everybody.
Yeah. Romance everyone to just go like poly on the whole town. You can do that. Not everyone's going to appreciate that, but you can romance everyone to your, like, whatever desires you want. In other, like, more traditional dating games, you get to a point where, like, fairly early on in the relationship, this even happens in Mass Effect, where you get to a point where people will start being contentious, and you need to pick one, and you can't make that, like, you can't unring that bell.
Okay.
Because I remember that with, what was it? You end up with like Miranda and Jack fighting in Mass Effect 2. Where I'm just like, I'm just trying to date Garrus, guys. Then I realized that Garrus was straight and had to go back and play all three games as a female.
Worth it.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. Every time I go and play that game, that whole series of games, it's just about like, okay, it's Garrus or Thane. Those are my two. Those are my two choices.
I can't even talk about Thane. Oh.
But that's, I don't know. I think the thing about dating games in other genres is it adds a level of
complexity,
emotionality to it that you can get invested on. You can imprint on. You can. I don't know what the right word is, but you can basically.
It makes it immersive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in this game, it's a lot of healthy relationships, and it's running as a sort of parallel to a very negative relationship that you're seeing with Eric, and with the conclusion being that you are a positive force while he is being a negative force, while both going on the same journey.
Yeah.
It has just a very lovely ending and kind of makes me really wish that we could revisit Verona Beach again sometime soon.
Maybe my turn.
Yes, definitely. But this one was actually very nice to go to after sort of the dark spiral of hyperfixation that I kind of fell into last time. Last time, it was rough going into that, like, into all that history, and that just kind of spiraled into me going into a bunch of, like, other news and history and,
it was a nice reprieve from the horrifying facts of Hawaii. Yes.
Yes.
But we're past that now.
Yes. And now I think we're just going to be on like a feel good detox, even though that this gave me some like big, big panic about dating. Like this, this did give me some legit anxiety from some of the texts that I received. Just like, oh no, like this is like, I don't know, not as bad as some other, like as like the real world is. This is like watered down so much. And just that alone, just even get like a small drop of that, just awful.
Yeah. Yeah. This is why so happy I'm married. I don't have to do that anymore or hopefully ever again. So now that we've discussed that, is there anything outside of Hawaii related things that you've been hyperfixating on lately?
I know for myself, I've been kind of apparently as like my feel good content is horror podcasts. That is my comfort food of just background noise. So I've been going through the Magnus archives again.
Okay.
Because that makes me feel good. And Hello from the Hollow Woods, which all that together has made me just want to start writing some more because I have some spooky ideas kicking around in my brain, but like in a good way that makes me feel good and not like the dark way that makes me feel bad about living.
So in like a Junji Ito way?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Like I want to write spooky stuff, but I'm in a good mood about it. I'm not writing happy-go-lucky stuff and just feeling like I'm dead inside.
Miyazaki.
Yes. How about yourself?
I wouldn't necessarily call it a hyperfixation, but I managed to bring the idea in my brain to fruition again through the magical art and witchcraft that is crocheting. Not that we discuss our children much, but our oldest little is 6, and she has this giant, giant imagination, and she's silly as all get out. She took a liking to Baba Black Sheep, but found black to be boring. So one night before going to bed, she asked me to sing Baba Black Sheep, but pick a different color. So I said, okay, and me thinking I'm all smart. So I Baba Chartreuse Sheep. Well, she thought it was the most hilarious thing ever, and I must have sang it every night for 2 whole weeks. I sang it forever. She still enjoys it. And I got to thinking, if I could find the yarn, I could make a chartreuse sheep. And I found the yarn, and I made the sheep. And it's currently sleeping with her right now. So now she has a chartreuse sheep.
And she's very happy with it.
And for those of you who do not know, chartreuse is a yellowy, greeny shade of green. It's an interesting shade of green. So,
to be honest, I don't think I knew what chartreuse was before you bought the yarn. I'm terrible when it comes to the non-regularly named. Shown colors. When someone's just like, oh, like I'm like, I like teal. It's like, okay, think to teal. Now that's turquoise.
Okay.
So like if I, and the worst part is I've done like graphic design and stuff like that. Like I can find it on a computer. But if you ask me to visualize a color and it's one of the not like on a rainbow colors, I am not going to be able to think of it accurately.
Okay, that's fair. The only reason I know of it is because, and I wish I remembered what the actual card game was. It's from Recess. There's an episode of Recess where everyone gets super into this card game. It's like a trading card game, like Pokemon Magic the Gathering type thing. Everyone on the playground is obsessed with it, except, of course, TJ's group. And at one point, Spinelli's making fun of them, like, oh, I seem to have misplaced my chartreuse giraffe, because it was colors and animals. And the colors were all ridiculous. And of course, the animals were ridiculous. I'm like, what? My tiny brain, tiny 14-year-old brain watching Recess, going, what is chartreuse? And going down to my Hewlett-Packard brick of a computer, dial up, Google, no, I lie, ask Jeeves what chartreuse was. And ever since, that color's stuck in a brain wrinkle.
I'm just baffled that you didn't go to Yahoo.
No, it was always Ask Jeeves.
Okay.
I did Yahoo for multiple sources. If I was writing an essay and I needed sources, you had to go to different spots, right? You couldn't just go to one. So you do your Google, you do your Yahoo, and you do your Ask Jeeves and see if you could find other stuff for a bigger variety of sources. I'm not old, you are.
That's categorically false.
Shut up.
But I think over the next little... the next little bit, we're going to be keeping it with the not quite light and fluffy, but the feel good content before we dive into anything heavy, because there's some good stuff to get into. And I think right now my brain needs good vibes. Can be spooky vibes, but needs to be good vibes.
Good spooky vibes.
Good spooky vibes.
Spooky, scary skeletons, but good vibes only.
Yeah. Like the ones that play their ribs like xylophones. That's the type of spooky, scary skeleton that I'm looking for.
That's perfect.
Not like 1930s Mickey skeletons.
Oh, no, that's bad. No,
Those ones are trying to be happy and upbeat, but they are also being pure nightmare fuel.
I remember showing that to our daughter when I ended up finding it. And she was all in her like 2.5, 3-year-old spooky, scary face. And she loved it. She watched it for so long. Oh my gosh. But no, super into it. Xylophone rib skeleton vibes only.
Yes. That's what we'll be looking for going forward.
Yes.
But until then, remember, like what you like.
No matter what the mean kids say.
Bye.
Big thank you to Ethel and the Androids for the use of their song Used to Know You for the intro and the outro. You can find the link to their SoundCloud in the show description, as well as all our links to our social media. And thanks for tuning in and listening to our podcast. If you like the show, be sure to review and subscribe on the podcast platform of your choice.